This is Canada Reads American Style, featuring two friends who love Canada Reads and Canadian literature. Welcome our host Rebecca from Michigan and Tara from Ontario. Hi everyone, it is Rebecca and today I am speaking with author Sydney Hegley. Sydney is a queer Anglo-Catholic writer from the Greenbelt in Southern Ontario. They are the author of Bird Suit, published by Invisible Publishing, May 7th, 2024, and The Pump, which was the winner of the 2022 Relit Literary Award for Short Fiction and a finalist for the 2022 Trillium Book Award. Their essays have appeared in Catapult and Electric Literature, Event, and have been featured by Lit Hub, the Poetry Foundation, and Psychology Today. Their essay collection, Bad Kids, is forthcoming with Invisible in fall 2025. Sydney's work often explores small-town queerness, environmental justice, mental illness, religious life, and the complicated relationships between these things. They live with their husband and French bulldog on Treaty 13 land in Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Sydney.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. It is wonderful to be here.
And I will say to everybody, as everyone knows me by now pretty well, I do tend to gush when I really love a book and an author. And I've already warned Sydney that I tend to, you know, I really, really, really love Bird Suit. So for all of you who have yet to read it, because it comes out May 7th, so it'll be out shortly, can you just tell us a little bit about Bird Suit to kind of whet their appetite to read this book?
Absolutely. So Pursuit is a novel that is set in a fictionalized Southern Ontario town called Port Peter, a tourist town that sort of has heavy tourist traffic in the summers and is very, very empty in the winters. And the central premise of the novel is that in this Southern Ontario town, the local young women who grew up there, who have gotten pregnant by the tourist men who sort of come in every summer when it's hot and beautiful, and the mysteriously wonderful peaches are super ripe and ready to eat. When those girls get pregnant and can't take care of their babies, they leave them on the cliffside in a laundry basket for these mysterious bird women or sirens to whatever they think will happen. It could be that they think that the birds will take care of them. It could be that they have no idea. So that's sort of the background of it. The premise of Bird Suit centers around the small Ontario tourist town with this relationship between the tourist women and the bird women and their babies. But a lot of the book focuses on this main character, Georgia Jackson, who is in her early 20s and has grown up in Port Peter all her life and was originally one of those babies left for the birds, but the birds did not take her. So her mother finds her still there essentially and raises her herself. And lots of relationships and interesting time jumps sort of evolve from there.
I think all of your characters are really compelling. I mean, each one of them, you could sort of do like a deep dive into each one of them because you give a great backstory to them, also their interactions with each other. So I think all your characters are so beautifully and well, you know, well developed. So,
oh my gosh. Thank you.
Well, there was one I didn't love so much, but we'll get into that later maybe. But anyway, okay. So one of the opening quotes is from Victoria Chang, and I will read it here. Quote, "There is a bird and a stone in your body. Your job is not to kill the bird with the stone," unquote. And can you talk about the significance of putting that quote into it right at the very beginning of the story?
Yeah. And so that quote from a Victoria Chang poem, who I absolutely love her so much, was one of the sort of last framing pieces that I put into the book when I had fully finished forming its plot and characters. I usually sort of start with an epigraph and use it as a bit of an anchor while writing to kind of return to my original premise or larger overarching idea that I was originally urgently trying to get to while drafting. And while the very first quote above that one is from a poem by Mary Ruffel, which sort of talks about sirens and the Odyssey, really captures the external plot quite well, I thought that this Victoria Chang quote with a bird and a stone in your body really paired very nicely in terms of giving an internal glimpse to the external. It's like I've always really seen Pert Suit as an external plot and internal plot sort of at some points braiding and blending together, at some points in direct conflict with one another, at some points kind of threaded so tightly that they are indistinguishable from each other. But there is definitely a sense in the book, I hope, that there are the external bird women, sirens. And then, without sort of spoiling too much, there are sort of a sense of internal birds as well, birds who aren't capitalized in the book, that different characters sort of have different senses of those as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking about that, and I definitely see that. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, that gives me something more to consider. Thank you for that. Now, one of the things too, I looked at your website today, and it's funny because the quote that you have right there on your website is a quote that I used in my review of your book. And if you could just, I'm going to throw this in at you, but if you could just mention, the quote is, "You are only worth what you can remember." I love that.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's interesting. The entire book really started with that line. I had that line before I had conceived of most of the plot and characters. And it's been something that even when the plot sort of shifted and the bird women looked slightly different and the characters, some came and some went and the cast grew and shrank and the plot sort of changed all around, this like remaining thread beneath of who you are being directly tied, potentially for better or for worse, with what you've been through and your perception, like, of your own history and of your own life story, has always just stayed very strongly in the forefront of my mind while writing. Like, it really, I think it's a good question to have after the comparison of the epigraphs with an external story and internal story, because Birdsuit sort of jumps around back and forth in time, and it becomes clear that characters remember events in slightly different ways and have their own sort of subjective perceptions of not only what has happened sort of externally, but who's at fault for those things. And if they are choosing to remember some things and then unable to remember others. And when I started writing this book, I had right around that time been diagnosed with a dissociative disorder, which involves a lot of things related to memory and how your brain is able to process memory chronologically, particularly traumatic memory. And there have been just sort of countless studies that show that when people experience something traumatic, your sense of recording that memory, like chronologically, in a way that makes sense and can be accessed later, just quite literally is turned off, and that perception is stored like somewhere else in your brain, so that when you're triggered into, say, a flashback or something like that, it's your brain's attempt to reassemble the memory correctly in front of you, but it can't because it didn't record it correctly. It's sort of like trying to play back a movie filmed on your phone, but you didn't clean your lens properly. So it doesn't matter how many times you replay it in front of you, it's not going to reassemble itself because it didn't record it in the same way as a normal video. So it's so much of this book underlying the main plots and the plots like physically are sort of how each character perceives and remembers events before the book, events after, things that we experience as readers that are subjective to us and subjective to the characters separately.
Yeah, I really love that part when the layers get peeled back and then you start to realize, oh, wait a minute, this is what he or she thought. And now it's like, okay, now that's not what they experience. You know what I mean? Like you start to see the quote truth, I guess, of what really occurred. And I love that part of it because I do think that's often, just in general, I think that's kind of a human experience, right? That we don't always remember for whatever reason, or interpret it a certain way that maybe isn't the way others in the story would interpret it. You know what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. And I think that in our current climate, like post and still within COVID, in our political climate in North America specifically, the emphasis for truth-telling is so important, and finding what is true and what isn't in terms of journalistic integrity and sourcing. But I think that when we're telling the stories of our histories, and I feel as though, particularly for me, like I teach creative nonfiction classes, and I feel as though a lot of students come in sort of worried about not being able to recall exactly what happened in particular moments in their lives. And they're worried about being unable to come across like as objective as possible, as if all forms of storytelling and all forms of narrative have to be the same as journalism. But it's been a really important and freeing thing for me to learn that I have no way of telling a story that is not subjective. And that doesn't mean that I am not expanding and opening and receiving other people's stories and extending sympathy and empathy to other people's experiences. It means that to deny my lived experience and the things that contribute to my perception of events that I have been through and events I've only experienced secondhand would be to be an unreliable narrator trying to pretend that they aren't unreliable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Now, I do want to ask, because you talked a little bit about it your writing process? And I am always really curious because I love writers. I don't have the talent for it. So I like to dig into your brain a little bit and understand how you work. So I was wondering whether in terms of Birdsuit or anything else that you've written, do you start with the idea of the ending before you begin? Do you outline? Do you schedule writing time? Like, what's your process for writing?
Yeah, I really, so the first published book that I wrote was my interconnected story collection, The Pump. And so when I went into Birdsuit, I was really operating in a stance of wanting to learn how to write a novel, like as I was writing one, without the expectation of how long it would take, of what the starting point would look like in relation to the ending point. It took significantly longer than I had expected, I think, because The Pump's first sort of workable draft was written in about 6 months while I was in university. And wow. Birdsuit has taken about 6 years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, process-wise, I tend to not be someone who has the ability to write the same amount of words for the same amount of time each day. I have ADHD, and that contributes significantly to the specialization of each writing session, sort of. I'm very constantly switching physical locations where I'm writing. I tend to only be able to focus on writing when I'm surrounded by people making background noises and speaking around me.
Wow, that's amazing.
I write the majority of the dialogue before I write anything else. So all of the dialogue in Birdsuit, pretty much all of it, was written before most of anything else. And the same thing happened with The Pump. I will usually be in the notes app on my phone somewhere odd, like in a park or on transit or something. And the idea of the particular conversation will come, and I will just write the conversation sort of script style with brackets beneath that say things like, insert description of the churchyard here, or I will, when I'm trying to, like, to me, dialogue, it's important to me that there is more sort of subtext and substance in between lines than there is sort of like obviously right on the page. So when I'm first writing dialogue and it's the very first ugly sort of draft, what I'm doing is writing lines and then in brackets underneath them, writing the intent of the line and trying to figure out ways when I go back to close the gap between those two things. And then I'll add things like what the relationship is like in brackets, insert moment where they walk on a beach here and it prevents me from slowing down by I find that dialogue is easier for me. It comes faster. And if I feel as though I have to stop to describe something, it's almost like using a different part of my brain and creative process, and it interrupts the dialogue a bit.
That is really fascinating. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I don't know that I've ever heard anyone describe it like that. But I think if I were a writer, I probably would be the same way, because I my brain moves really fast. I think really fast, and I could just see myself like whipping out the dialogue, but then needing to go back and like fill it all in, right? So I think that's fascinating.
Well, controversial opinion, but I think everyone can be a writer. So
okay, well,
I think everyone has the ability to develop the skill.
Yeah.
It is something I pretty firmly believe.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll keep you in mind if I ever figure out a way to develop that skill. Exactly. Okay.
I believe in you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I feel that very strongly. That's awesome. Okay. Now, some of the primary characters in Bird Suit find, and it could actually be all of them, but I'm just thinking of two in particular, actually. But some of the primary characters in Bird Suit find it hard to practice self-love, and they dwell in shame. And I love Georgia so much. I just want to say that. And I just want to know, because of course I believe the story goes on way after the story ends, but I just need to know, is this a burden that your characters will always carry? Or are they going to be able to like reach beyond that sort of shame, that sense of shame?
Yeah. It's a wonderful question. I think I probably answer the question slightly differently in different moments of enlightenment / despair. Mm-hmm. And when I was George's age, I definitely would have said, yes, you carry it with you all the time, and it makes you a great writer. It's sort of a flame beneath you, but I have thankfully grown out of the idea that sufferance equates to the best kinds of art. And I just, as a human being, it's important for me personally to believe that even if shame definitely impacts people in different ways, and whatever events took place in a person's life that has contributed to that, like, the events will never suddenly magically not have existed,
mm-hmm.
because you can't go back and prevent them from happening at all. The same way that forgiveness is not about one, forgetting what someone has done to hurt you, and two, it doesn't mean that your relationship continues in any capacity beyond the moment in which it broke down.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Walker, who was an author who I love very dearly.
Same here.
wrote a short essay in her introduction to an anniversary edition of the book Barracoon, where she talks about, like, how do we write about traumatic things without traumatizing readers, or sort of like leaving our readers with that trauma, like, completely unsolved, not really like in a plot sense of every story should end happily ever after, or every problem within a plot should be resolved. But there's a difference between a book that includes traumatic events and a book that places the weight and that heaviness of a traumatic event on its readers without showing them how to lighten that load,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yes.
And she very briefly and eloquently in this introductory essay talks a little bit about how when she writes the most deplorable things, depicts some of the most horrible things in human history, despite those things having really happened and really having an impact, a visceral impact on readers, she's also building them a ladder, in a sense, with which to climb out of that narrative. And even if, like, she can't individually go into the mind and heart of each reader and say, this is what you need to do to feel as though you do not have to carry the weight of the things that you just read around with you. But she can point in the direction of healing and sort of go, hey, if you start walking sort of that way, there is hope and healing in that direction. And I can't tell you exactly what it looks like for you individually, mm-hmm. because that is between you and your creator. But there is hope there if you go that way.
I'll put that in the show notes as well, because I think people might be very interested in reading that after you talking about it. And this is a pretty obvious question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. But how does your faith inform your writing?
Yeah, so I think that particularly when it came to Birdsuit, it is always interesting and surprising context for some people to know that I had not returned to a formal faith setting of any kind when I started the book. I grew up sort of casually Anglican in that sort of small town sense where you're able to go into places every Christmas and Easter and sense, particularly in my small town, a pretty distinct class divide where just as someone who grew up below the poverty line, there is just sort of a clear othering that takes place. Mm-hmm. And then the odd inner and outer conflicts that become quite obvious even to a child when people play church and then, or quote unquote play church, and then go out into the world or in their private homes and hurt other people. Mm-hmm. And that difference between what someone says their morality is and what their actions show sort of as a child didn't give me room to see sort of what my own faith independent of that would even begin to look like. So I was not religious from the age of, I think, 12 to 22. And through that, I was in school, I came out as queer, and knowing what I knew in my childhood and sort of having the only representation of Christianity specifically, while I was in university, being oppressive rather than loving, constricting rather than freeing, even in the moments of inclinations of wanting to sort of explore that, I felt it wasn't safe for me to do so just because of who I was and the things I cared about. And I started the book right around the time I met my now husband, who was in a choir at a church and was their organist. And I originally only stepped back in church because I had agreed to watch him sing in the choir and thought, well, maybe it'll be a good, like a field exercise, sort of like an undercover agent for fiction research. See what this church thing's all about. I can really get like wonderful detail if I'm sitting in there and I could like see what everything like smells like again and all of these sorts of things. And when I went in, and I'm cognizant that this is not even remotely a universal experience, and that's sort of why I'm so like I'm aware of that while being super grateful at I was given this experience, is that I was brought in to a faith life and religious life after that expanded who I was and celebrated who I was. And that was a life that talked about aspects of tradition and history that I cared about, and immense amounts of social justice and community work, grassroots community work, feeding people, clothing people, directly helping people, racial justice, queer justice. Most of my queer friends are in church with me, and I see a lot of them through church, and which doesn't negate or take away from the fact that institutionally and systemically, the Catholic Church and the American exceptionalism, evangelical movements, and all of these things institutionally enact an incredible amount of harm. And there are individual parishes and individual people in those institutions who are quietly and diligently loving their neighbors, like as Christ would, like going and being with the lowest of low and poorest of poor, and directly working in community rather than, you know, making a show of things politically.
Yeah, I have a good friend who is in that type of church, and the work they're doing is amazing. And she would echo exactly what you just said. So that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to make a pitch to everyone who's listening to this podcast to pick up a copy of Bird Suit when it is available. And I want you to either buddy read it with somebody, or I want you to read it in a book group, because I think this makes a great book club book. There's so many layers to this book. You and I've kind of talked about it a little bit offline. And so I think there are so many gems, hidden gems and not so hidden gems that you can pull out of the story. But my question for you is then, if they do a book club read, what question or questions would you like your readers to explore?
Yeah. So I actually thought about this particular question for a while when I originally saw it, because guiding questions do help my reading quite a bit when I'm reading other books. However, since I've written this book, I am a big proponent of trying to be very, very present in one's body and noticing where your particular subjective attention, just as a human being, is very naturally drawn unexpectedly. Like, I think that, and sincerely hope that when this book goes out into the world on May 7th, that even when I am finished in the writing and making of its meaning, that the readers will then take up their part of its meaning making, and they will continue to wade through it and find parts of it that very naturally and sometimes inexplicably draw their attention or lighten up an idea of theirs. And I am always surprised, without a doubt, when I have readers, even of my last book, who ask questions and have comments about lines and separate stories in very personal and subjective ways to them that I hadn't have even considered in those ways. So I would be less inclined to give readers, unfortunately, very specific questions, but I would ask readers to take a bit of a leap of faith, and in the moments in which they feel either very drawn in or a little uncomfortable, to attempt to sit with whatever that feeling is and kind of feel it in their body and try to question why what they've read made them feel a certain way.
Okay. I will be reading it for a third time, and I already know that there is a place that I love you. You just said that because there is a place that kind of made me uncomfortable. And I don't know why, but now I'm going to go back, read it for a third time. And I'm going to put my challenge out to Tara that we've got to do a buddy read for it. But I really want to sit with that more. Oh my gosh. Okay. We have come to our final question, and it is a question that Tara always asks. And I love to do it because it sort of represents what we do here on the podcast, which is talk about great books. So I'd just like to ask you, what are you currently reading?
Amazing. So I am currently reading the novel Play by Jess Taylor, and it was released this past Tuesday from Hook Hug. And even though Jess is a pretty well-known author here in her own right with her first two books, Play is her very first novel. So I was incredibly excited to pick it up on Tuesday when it came out, and I have already started it, and it is one that should be on everybody's bedside table for sure.
Okay, great. Anything else you want to mention, just that you've read that you've really loved? Anything to entice our listeners?
I am also reading at the moment Carrie Barwin's new essay collection called Imagining, Essays on Language, Identity, and Infinity. And Gary Barwin is an incredible author, incredible poet, and incredible person in general. But this is surprisingly one of his only essay collections. And it is already just so, so incredible. As someone who really just loves to make connections between etymology and word choice and language and personal and collective history and all of these sorts of things. I really deeply see essays in particular as constellations. So Carrie thinking of them in similar ways is very unsurprising, but very, very cool.
Sydney, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Like I said, I want to just really encourage everyone to pick up their book and, like I said, do it, whether it's in a book group or a buddy read. Please read this book. You will absolutely love it. There's, like I said, so many layers to it, and I promise you will love the book. I was just talking to a friend about, she's a bookseller, and she was saying how, you know, she feels like, oh, what if somebody doesn't like a book I really recommend? And I think, no, you have to speak with great confidence. I know you will love this book. So that is what I'm saying about Bird Suit. Everybody, please pick it up. But Sydney, again, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you so, so much, Rebecca. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on our bookish journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing Canada Reads American Style wherever you listen. You can connect with the podcast and Rebecca on Instagram at Canada Reads American Style and with Tara at On a Branch Reads. Until next time, keep reading.